Hello, this is Diana Previs with Happy Gut Healthy Lives. I'm so excited today. I have with me Mel Schwartz, who is a psychotherapist, marriage counselor, leadership consultant, and speaker. If you've ever seen him on TED Talk, he does Embracing Uncertainty, Overcoming Anxiety, and he is the author of two books, Possibility Principle, How Quantum Physics Can Improve the Way You Think, Live, and Love, and The Art of Intimacy, The Pleasure of Passion. Welcome, Mel, today.
Thank you so much.
And I wanted to ask you, let the viewers know about your background and how you got into this field.
Well, this is my second career. It's a calling and a passion in terms of midlife transition. I had been in business halfway through my life, and I just felt that I needed to do something more fulfilling. Coming out of graduate school, I realized what I was being taught in graduate school was inconsistent with my beliefs, but I needed the degree and the license to practice therapy, so I had to stay the course. I began to read about a different reality, which was primarily informed by quantum physics. And I should say that I was a mediocre science student at best, so don't get thrown by the term quantum physics. It was just the principles. And the principles of quantum physics are that reality is uncertain. We were taught that we can seek certainty and should seek certainty. This came from the teachings of Sir Isaac Newton, which he called determinism, that if we had enough information, we could predict the future. I began to see that when people became wed to and addicted to seeking certainty, it causes anxiety because we can't know the future. But that need to know stimulates fear and anxiety. And I turned to quantum physics and saw that there was a whole new picture, which was telling us that reality is awash with uncertainty. And instead of that being an, oh, no, I looked at it as, well, that's great. Because uncertainty equals possibility, hence the title of my book, The Possibility Principle. And I thought, in our personal lives, when we get stuck in certainty, we're not in flow. We're not in our change process. That's why it becomes hard to change. So I looked at these principles, uncertainty, and the ensuing potentiality or possibility, and there's another big principle from quantum physics, and that's inseparability. The notion of oneness or wholeness or inseparability, typically it's attributed to spiritual traditions and mystical tradition. But now, surprisingly or amazingly, quantum physics has revealed that reality is essentially inseparable. It's as one. So when the hardest of science merges with the most spiritual traditions, we need to take notice of that. Now, what's the advantage to inseparability? Well, we've lived according to Newton's theme of being cogs in a great big machine. He said reality is a giant machine comprised of separate and discrete parts, and we became the cogs in the machine. And as separate cogs, that left us with a lack of empathy and compassion because we're disconnected. By the way, that disconnection is the source, in my opinion, of depression. Depression is a feeling of disconnection from one another, nature, reality. And so when we turn to inseparability, compassion and empathy make perfect sense. Because my being compassionate and empathic to you and to others is to give the same gift to myself. There's no separation between you and me. So I use those techniques in relationships and in communication. So you asked the question, Diana, how did I come to this? I looked at these amazing principles and thought, what would happen if I lived my life and changed my beliefs to become in alignment with these principles? And saw the benefits to myself, And I started to bring it into my practice as a therapist and marriage counselor and saw the benefits and then ultimately wrote the book. So that's what brought me here.
Well, it's really powerful. And you mentioned about what leads to depression, you know, if feeling disconnected. You can see in our United States the shootings that are going on, in the foods that we eat. You know, one of the biggest indicators that when trusting your gut, knowing what feels right and what feels, and you're also going to feel a certain sense of anxiety when you're going to do something new. So I love that in your TED Talk when you said embracing uncertainty, it can be your best friend. And I'd like you to touch a little bit more and share the story you did about that woman on the TED Talk. That would be great.
Sure. So, again, I believe that the epidemic rate of anxiety is very fundamentally due to our over-reliance and need for certainty. So my premise is this. The future is and should be unknown. That's why we call it the future. But our need to know makes us live life as though, imagine that you're playing chess. And you're sitting back and you're calculating, if I make this move, what will the consequences be? And if I do this, what will happen? And we're analyzing and slicing and dicing and trying to predict the future, but we're not actually engaging. We're not in the flow of life. Now, if we can learn to change our relationship with uncertainty and actually welcome and embrace uncertainty, fear and anxiety retreat. So the narrative, the story you're referring to, is that in my talk and in my book, I talked about a woman I was working with years ago. She was married and came to me around her anxiety. And I learned that she and her husband were mired in a very miserable marriage. They tried marriage counseling. It didn't work. And they'd really grown apart and shared little in common. The good news is that they were financially independent and they had no children. So I wondered and asked her, why was she staying married? And she said to me, I don't know who I would be as a divorced woman. There it was. The fear of who would I be, the unknown, the uncertainty of the future, kept her stuck in the present. So she was choosing to stay unhappily in the known as opposed to experiencing an unknown, which could have completely been a marvelous place. So I created a visualization for her, and it was this. I asked her to close her eyes and imagine that she's by the side of a river. And I asked her to think of the river as the current, as being metaphorically the same as the flow of her life. So I asked her to walk into the river, into the middle of the river, where the current picked up. I let a few moments pass, and I asked her where she saw herself. She said, I'm in the middle, the current has picked up, but I've grabbed a hold of a boulder, big boulder I see here. I asked her why. And she said, well, the river is bending to the right up ahead, and I can't see where it's going. I need to know where it's going. I explained to her that that bend around to the right was the equivalent of her being divorced. She needed to know who she'd be as a divorced woman, and I proposed to her she needed to let go of that boulder. It doesn't mean she's not free to navigate as she goes along, but she has to get into the flow. Which brings us to this question of, who am I? I wrote an article years ago called Who Am I? And as modestly as I can say this, to my amazement, maybe 500,000 people read the article. And I realized it was because people Google, who am I? So in my article, entitled Who Am I? I opened by saying that's the wrong question to ask. Because who am I suggests that there's a fixed, specific answer. Well, I don't want to be a fixed, specific identity. The question we should ask ourselves is, how would I like to experience my life? You see, that's flowing, contemplative, open. It's moving. who I am should be changing and shifting and transforming throughout my life. I want to know how would I like to experience life. And to do that, I can learn to let go of old thoughts and old feelings that imprison me. It's possible, and you can learn how to do this. And when we do, I call that mastery of thinking, the ability to see your old thought and not become it. That's a powerful moment, because then there's a sense of me that's more than just the accumulation of my old thoughts, the millions of them, which corral me and imprison me in my life. So I've taken all these different elements in terms of creating a strategy and an approach for being able to live resiliently, with less fear, to be able to communicate more effectively, and to thrive in our lives. That's the goal, ultimately, isn't it?
Right, right. I have a question for you. Maybe you can help us understand, as embracing uncertainty, or one element of uncertainty is, let's say you're going through a transition, whether it be a divorce or a job change or a move, and it all of this affects you from a physical level, a physiological level, but an emotional and spiritual level. What can one do, because they're not going to have access to you 24/7, what can we do when we're in these stages where we feel this anxiety coming up? What exercises can we do to help ourselves moving through it with ease?
So when you feel anxiety, when you feel fear, ask yourself, what was the last thought that I just had that I attached to that set up this anxiety? And you probably find it. And then go back and see that thought and look at it and say, well, it's just a thought. I don't have to become that thought. So let's make this practical. You have a new job and you're feeling anxious about it. It's just before your first day at work. And you ask yourself, what was the thought? And you find it. The thought was, what if I'm not prepared? What if this job is too hard for me? There's the thought that sets up the anxiety. I look at it and say, well, that thought would set up anxiety, but it's just a thought. Here's a different thought. What if I'm fully prepared? What if everybody likes me and really thinks the work I'm doing is great? I could just as easily have that thought. The reality is, I don't know how today is going to go at work. The best I can do is be present and not distracted by fearful thoughts. So I'm going to set my intention to not let fearful thoughts ignite anxiety. And that's the best I can do. Then I can, just like navigating that river, I can navigate this day at work. I can navigate divorce. I can navigate anything better if I'm present and not mired in fearful thoughts. The only thing I think in life that we should seek to control is to have a control over negative, fearful thought. Everything else makes no sense to try to control. You can't. It's implausible, and you shouldn't try. But if I can have a mastery of thinking where I don't succumb to old negative thought, that's the very best I can do.
What is this in terms of you have a shift, the power of the mind, and that's kind of what you're leading into. Could you expand on that and how you've helped people with your workshops?
Mm-hmm. I think that a shift of mind is about the most powerful thing we can experience. It's the ability to look at something differently and say, aha, because that allows us to see differently. It's like, picture that you go through your whole life wearing really, really dark sunglasses. And those dark sunglasses, let's say, are emblematic of your beliefs and thoughts about yourself and others. And then one day you have an aha experience. You take the sunglasses off, and all of a sudden, everything looks very different. That's a shift of mind. So to achieve a shift of mind, it's essential that we look at our operating beliefs, particularly those which are getting in our way, which are self-denigrating or limiting, and ask yourself, how did I come to those beliefs? Why do I think they're true? And what if they're not true? All of those kind of questions and reflections can catalyze a shift of mind where you have what I call a defining moment. A defining moment is when I have an insight. You know, we all have insights. But typically you have an insight, and after a few hours or a few days, it fades. It doesn't mean anything. I decided earlier in life that on occasions when I would have a personal insight, I would really commit to that insight. I would think to myself, wow, this is important. I am different now because of this. This is going to head me in a new direction. That's what I call a defining moment. And when we have defining moments, we can have transformative experience. Life doesn't have to be linear, and it doesn't have to be slow and steady progress, by the way. I've never been an advocate of it has to be slow and steady. It can come in a defining moment, in a brilliant aha moment, where you head in a new direction and you get the rewards and the gratification much sooner. So that's all what I mean by a shift of mind. Stepping out of my shoes, taking off my sunglasses, so to speak, or putting them on if they had never been there, and looking at things differently. There's no objective reality. There's only subjective perception that actually constructs our reality.
Right, right. Our thoughts can control our outcomes in terms of how we deal with the situations. We can help to formulate a better outcome for ourselves.
So therefore, the goal is to learn how to think as opposed to having thoughts. Now, I'll give everybody an example of that. Thought tricks us in that it's telling us the truth. So thought tends to act in what is called literal thought. So here's literal thought. I am such a loser. I never get the right answers. I blow all my opportunities. That's literal thought. That's an example of thought telling me the truth. What we want to do is turn that into what is called participatory thinking. That would sound like this. You know, I very often have a thought. Let me tell you what my thought is telling me. My thought is telling me that I'm a loser. My thought is telling me that I don't succeed. See what I'm doing there? I'm holding up my thought and I'm saying, I'm having a thought. Here's what my thought is telling me. That creates a distance between you and your thought. That's powerful because in that distance between you and your thought, you're introducing thinking. And that's where the pivot for change lies.
So in your opinion, what comes first, the feeling or the thought?
My belief is the thought occurs first, but then instantly thought summons up the accompanying feeling. Now, we may at times not be aware of the thought. So when you're feeling a particular way, you know, arguably when it's a problematic or negative feeling, stop and ask yourself, what was the last thought that I just had that set up this feeling? And then you can find the thought, and then seeing the thought, you can say, oh, that was it. It's just the thought. You can let it go, and then it frees you from the feeling that you're subjected to.
And with our, you know, everyone has families that they've grown up in and ways of being. So what constructively can we do, in for example, in hosting this summit, I felt a lot of different feelings that I had over periods of time in my life, whether I was training for a triathlon or I decided to do a century ride, 109 miles in one day, and train for it in 6 weeks. So I discovered a lot about my personality that I would jump in, and then I'd have this overwhelming anxiety, and then managing that anxiety and really kind of acquainting myself with my way of being and how I've always been. So how do we, if walk through that with, as you said, a new pair of lenses when we commit to something and we're going to feel the anxiety? What things can we do to help ourselves through that process?
So in this circumstance, my question would be, why have you concluded that you're going to have to feel an anxiety? So that's formatted in your belief system. So let's take a look at that. Why must you feel anxious? You may
say, because I feel it in my belly.
Okay, so if you feel it in your belly.
I physically feel it in my belly, yes.
So that's memory operating. You have a memory that's operating that in these circumstances in the past, you have felt anxious, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're operating from memory. Now, you may also have a thought that's inducing that anxiety. So whether it's the memory of an old thought or it's the memory on a physiological level, it's memory. So then you can stop and remind yourself, just because I have felt anxious on these occasions in the past, there's no need for it now. What am I actually anxious about? Now you're thinking, what am I feeling anxious about? Would you have an answer to that question?
I would. The first word comes up would be to always be prepared.
Okay. So I'm feeling anxious because I need to always be prepared. Maybe I'm not prepared?
Yes, or just the perfectionism part of that, of being prepared.
Okay, so I'm feeling anxious because it's important for me to be perfect and to be perfectly prepared. Oh, all right, well, that's not serving me. I really don't need that. So why do I need to be perfectly prepared? What's going to happen if I'm not perfectly prepared? Is there such a thing as perfection? The pursuit of perfection is like the pursuit of certainty. It doesn't exist, and it's going to set up a neurotic anxiety. Therefore, maybe I need to think that I'm going to give up seeking perfection because it doesn't work. It's unachievable, unattainable. If it were achievable, it's undesirable. No one could be with someone who's perfect. You know, a machine, going back to Newton's machine-like universe, a machine can operate perfectly for a while. We're humans. We were never designed to be perfect. Think about sitting outside and watching a beautiful rainbow, looking up at it in awe. Would you say, you know, but that orange band is not quite as wide as the yellow band. It's not perfect. We wouldn't do that. Nature isn't perfect. By the way, think about it this way. Perfection is a made-up concept. It's an idea created by human mind. It doesn't have an actual intrinsic reality. So we made up this thing, this construct, and then we try to pursue it, and we make ourselves anxious. Give it up. You need a new game plan.
Right. So adopt more of the 80-20 rule?
Maybe don't adopt any rule. Maybe the only rule to adopt there is to be present, aware, and enjoy yourself.
Right.
After all,
as I am in this interview.
You're not competing in an Olympic event that you've trained your whole life for and you want to win the gold. What's the difference? do your best, by all means, but don't burden yourself with, am I prepared enough? And this isn't your career. It's not your profession. And even if it were, it would make your performance more challenged if you burden yourself with anxiety. But in this case, it's not your career. What are you making yourself anxious about? Who's looking?
Right. Tell us about your book that you have, The Possibility Principle. Expand a little bit more about how you feel passionate about it.
Well, I've been speaking about and teaching in workshops and in individual and couples counseling for over 20 years, whereby I've been integrating these new methods and approaches. So I felt that I needed to really write a book so that anybody can pick it up and get the big picture. And I needed it to do it for myself as well. I felt incomplete. So the book took me 6 or 7 years. It's not a big book, but it took many years. And in that book, I explain that most of what we struggle with, anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, conflicted relationships, ineffective communication, are due to the way we were trained to think reality operates. Again, going back to 17th century thinkers. Explain why. And so I kind of de-victimize us, which is, it's not our fault. Then I introduced that when we open to these new principles of uncertainty, potentiality, and inseparability, everything changes. And then I take it from the theoretical into the practical. I have many, many, many anecdotes and illustrations of how you can master your thinking, how you can develop a new approach to relationship, describe in it, how you can become self-empowered and effective in your communication, how to derive genuine, authentic self-esteem, and how to facilitate your change process, how to become in charge of your own life process. So it's called the possibility principle because in the moment before your next thought, you exist in a state of pure possibility. But if we keep having the same old thoughts, we never achieve that possibility. Another way of looking at it is this. The most important relationship you will ever have isn't with your parents, your children, your spouse, or your partner. The relationship that's going to impact you far more than any other relationship is with your thoughts. They are your constant companion. They script your life. And so I teach the reader how to become the master of their thinking as opposed to being subjected to and imprisoned by old thought.
That's beautiful.
That's what the book's about. Thank you.
It really is. It was so wonderful having you here on the summit today, and thanks for your guidance. Is there anything else that you want to share with everyone about what's going on for you next?
Well, you mentioned my TEDx talk, which is out and available. If you just Google my name, Mel Schwartz, TEDx, you'll come to it. I'm working on developing a podcast, which will be out in 3 months. It may be called A Shift of Mind with Mel Schwartz. And, you know, for anybody who's interested, if you go to my website, melschwartz.com, the announcement will be up in regard to the podcast, of course, the book, and the TEDx talk.
Oh, thank you so much for being a part of this today. And please, everyone, watch the TED Talk because it's very enlightening. And tomorrow it'll be another episode of Happy Gut, Healthy Lives. And we'll see you soon.